Brad Johnson, thanks for joining us at Montana Public Radio.
Good to be here, Eric. Thank you.
Why do you want to be the next governor of Montana?
Well, if folks look at my record, they'll see that for the last nearly decade and a half, I've had a very real commitment to serving the people of Montana, having had the privilege to serve as Secretary of State for 4 years and now as chairman of the Montana Public Service Commission. I think our legislative process in some important areas is broken. I was very frustrated with the legislative session this time, particularly the budget process, where we looked at a $10 billion budget that the Finance and Claims Committee in the Senate heard in 2 days. And then at executive action, there were literally file folders full of budget amendments that were passed en masse. And then beyond that, it has become awfully evident to me that the federal government's intrusion and overreach into policy areas that have been traditionally the purview of the states is just out of control. We're going to have to start pushing back at the state level. It's too late for us to expect the federal government to fix itself.
As governor of Montana, how do you do something about federal government involvement in Montana?
Well, you look at things, for example, like the Clean Power Plan that is going to be just disastrous for us economically, and you start with engaging, for example, the Attorney General's office and other regulators in this case. And you say, look, we've got to come together and create a united front. We've got to look at where we can conceivably litigate effectively against this. We've got to see if we can't rally the political forces and push back.
What experience do you have that would give voters confidence that you'd be a good leader for the state of Montana?
As Secretary of State, I was the lone statewide elected Republican in Montana for 4 years, and yet we were able to push through the legislature some very important election-related law, not the least of which was a bill that requires Montana to tabulate votes from paper ballots instead of using electronic voting machines. That has been a tremendously beneficial law for us as we've had some difficult recount situations over time and the like. I'm the first, to the best of my knowledge, the first freshman member of the Public Service Commission to move into the role of chairman. And, just looking at my bio, if you will, I was on student council in high school. I was the ag school's representative on the courses and curriculum committee at the University of Illinois. Been chairman of countless committees and groups over time with Chambers of Commerce and Downtown Bozeman Association and that kind of thing.
I wonder what your feelings are about the campaign finance law that the Montana legislature passed this last legislative session.
The devil's going to end up in the details, and I'm withholding comment on the Commissioner Modell's rules until final draft is out and really dissected. But I will tell you conceptually, I believe that sunshine is absolutely the best disinfectant.
This finance law basically just says that if you're going to spend money to influence elections, you have to report where that money's coming.
We as voters get to know where it comes from. Conceptually, I was very much supportive of the bill and still am very supportive of the concept. We need to make sure we get the rules implemented correctly. The campaign finance situation in Montana today overall is a mess. We have created such a complex set of rules and regulations that more often than not, what we're doing is inadvertently turning candidates into crooks, not because they were trying to do something to skirt the law, but because the law is so doggone complex. And as governor, one of the things that I would try and do would be to have a comprehensive reform effort for the campaign laws in the state.
Assuming there is a contested primary at this point, the most high-profile other candidate for governor is Bozeman businessman Greg Gianforte, who hasn't totally committed to running. He said he's exploring. Why should Republican primary voters choose you instead of Greg Gianforte to be the nominee for governor?
Greg is a complete unknown in the political arena. Never been involved in public service, never been involved in a major campaign or an election. I, on the other hand, have served 4 years as Secretary of State, 4 years on the State Land Board, currently sit as Chairman of the Public Service Commission. I won a very, very tough statewide election in 2004 when I beat County Commissioner Bill Kennedy out of Billings to win the Secretary of State's race, elected by nearly 63% of the vote in the PSC district that I represent, and that's a district that's very much a microcosm of the state. You have a Republican stronghold in Flathead County, you have a Democratic stronghold in Lewis and Clark County, reservation county in Glacier County, kind of a swing county in Lake County, and a couple of very rural ag counties in Teton and Ponderay.
In the last legislative session, we saw a number of Republican lawmakers who chose to vote with Democrats on some pretty high-profile bills. Other Republican state lawmakers very much opposed that idea. What kind of Republican are you?
I have said ever since my college days that I am a Goldwater Reagan conservative. I'm very committed to those fundamental conservative principles of smaller government and lower taxes and greater opportunity for folks that I think result from some of those policies. I'm also a big believer there are times when you've got to realize that 75 or 80% of something is a whole lot better than holding out for 100% of nothing. And I think it's vitally important that a candidate or an elected official know what his or her political core is, what those fundamental principles are, the line across which they will not compromise. But until you get to that line, good faith compromise and good faith negotiation is and should be part of the process.
The recent U.S. Supreme Court decision that affirmed the right of same-sex marriage, what do you think the impact of that's going to be on Montana?
Once the dust settles, I don't think it's going to be dramatic. I personally believe that that is an issue that could have and should have been left to the states. That's part of that federal overreach that I'm talking about.
A lot of times voters make their decision, particularly in governor's races, based on the economic well-being of the state of Montana. The economy seems fairly healthy in Montana. There's a budget surplus. Unemployment is below the national rate. You're smiling and almost laughing as I describe that. It's not how it looks to you.
It isn't. Yes, we have a 4.1% unemployment rate, and that's great. But when you put that in context of Montana today being 49th out of 50 states in per capita income, in the late 60s and early 70s, we were 10th. A tremendous number of those 95.9% of folks that are employed being underemployed in terms of earning potential or working more than one job in order to make ends meet. We apparently have decided, I guess, in some quarters that being 49th out of 50 states is okay. I don't think it is.
So what's your plan to create better paying jobs in Montana?
It's not rocket science. We are still the treasure state. Our decline economically, that loss of prosperity that we have experienced in this state is tied directly to the decline of our traditional resource industries and agriculture in this state. We can and should be pushing to enter into agreements with the National Forest Service and with the Bureau of Land Management to transfer meaningful administrative authority over specific tracts of that federal land to the land managers of Montana who've proven themselves to be so very capable, and we can do that in a way that fits with our existing management programs for the state lands. And what we see as you travel eastern Montana is once thriving communities literally struggling to survive. In those communities, I think we can do things like create rural enterprise zones that hopefully will attract new employers to those communities. I think that we are missing a tremendous opportunity by not working very, very hard to make Montana the mecca of research and development in the clean coal technology area. We've got, round figures, $1 billion sitting in a coal trust tax fund that we keep arguing about. I think we ought to explore taking, say, a quarter of that, $250 million, create a revolving venture capital fund to attract and to assist credible R&D projects for clean coal and bring into the mainstream some projects could provide a tremendous boon to parts of eastern Montana. From a political and policy standpoint, to say that we are simply going to, out of hand, dismiss coal from our energy portfolio as a state and as a nation, those are terrible policy decisions. We simply can't afford to do that. So those are a couple of areas, and obviously it's a complex issue, and there's going to be a lot more things we'll talk about, but there's some starting points.
Brad Johnson, thanks for joining us at Montana Public Radio.
Eric, thank you. It's been a pleasure.